What does it actually mean to not take your partner's pain personally? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
All right, Tyler. I want to share a quick review, if I can just jump into that. It says, this is from Habitual Listener, and it says, my favorite podcast. I love to hear the work that you guys do. The conversations are always amazing and inspiring.
Short but sweet, and thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're listening.
Yeah.
Really appreciate you and appreciate you taking the time to go over and leave us an actual review. That means a lot to us. So thank you.
It does. It means a lot to us because we get your feedback and it also helps other people who might be looking for the same kind of resource to find us. So thank you. Thank you for your help.
Yeah. Hey, we were talking last night, Tyler, and I think it's time.
It's time for what?
It's time for you to go with the crew cut like Grandpa Harris.
It might be time. You know, I just shaved my beard off again after keeping it for like a year. So Grandpa, you know, I remember this takes me way, way back when I was in high school. I think I was a sophomore in high school. Like all the younger classmen got all this pressure to like cut their hair. So I decided to cut my hair like Grandpa Harris's, which Grandpa Harris had this just like straight up flat out, like flat top. Just like, it's not like a short haircut. It was an actual full on flat top, you know?
and he had the flat top our entire life until he died.
I never saw him without
a flat top.
And was always completely groomed too. Like mine grows out, it gets poofy and stuff, but his was always just straight flat.
I think our listeners don't understand, like when we talk about Grandpa Harris, like who Grandpa Harris was. Like
I know. They're like, okay, they're laughing at their grandpa now again. Like
he's like, no, this dude was a rock star. Like he was famous around these parts. You know?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a true caricature because he had that like weird, almost cartoonish look because of his flat top, and he wore like a one piece dicky like every day of his life,
and big hearing aids, like
massive
behind
hearing
both
aids,
ears.
Not like the more modern ones, the big massive hearing aids. They would still squeak really loud. And he substitute taught every day. He's like eight in his 80s and he was still
the preferred substitute teacher. Like they would request him like months in advance.
In all of Salt Lake he was like the top sub. Like everybody requested him.
He had 99 jokes memorized.
Well, maybe I'll consider the flat top, man. I don't mind being more like Grandpa Harris.
Be more like Don, man.
Maybe I'll cue that up and have that ready by the time Radiant Dawn rolls around or something.
Oh, dude, that would be amazing. So. Yeah. Well. Well, should we get into our topic?
Yes. Let me kind of preface this. I received this message from somebody I know. It's actually a really good question. So I'm actually going to read the question. I got permission to read the question, and then we can just kind of go wherever you want to go with it, Brandon. All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
So it says, here's the question. There seems to be an approach to support the addict I'm hearing quite frequently as of late. It's rooted in the book, The Four Agreements, which we're both a big fan of, right, Brandon? I mean, that's like, we love the book, The Four Agreements.
Love it.
Yeah. The concept is rooted in agreement number 2, don't take anything personally. I love the book. I found it super helpful for myself. I've also seen the principle manipulated. It's starting to drive me bonkers. Here's what I mean. Recently, I'm hearing of more and more betrayers and addicts adopting this mindset. I know that it is meant to assist with shame reduction and intolerance. However, I'm also seeing that some of these addicts and betrayers use the don't take it personally approach as a way to disassociate from accountability and move back to denial from harmful behavior. Some examples. I cheated on my wife. I'm not going to take her anger personally and just ignore or stonewall my wife. I'm not going to try to take her frustration personally and pretend it never happened, or even I didn't keep my promise. I'm not going to take her disappointment personally and again pretend like it never happened. Sometimes what I see in my own life and in some other couples going through this is the wife actually having boundaries and calling up the betrayer in a healthy way, and the response is the addict pushing the behavior under the rug, or even the addict putting themselves in a one-up position so the wife is not heard and then invalidated or make them seem like a jerk for their experience. So that's the gist of the question. On one hand, I totally get it. We don't have control over the emotions of others, and it's not healthy to go into the shame spiral anytime someone calls you up. So the question really is like, what do you think about this? Don't take it personally, as it's juxtaposed against the question here from this person.
Well, the examples that she gave were examples of somebody taking it very personally.
You're going to need to unravel that and kind of talk about that.
So I want to quote Don Miguel Ruiz. This is straight from the Four Agreements. I just want to kind of set the table with this. He says, whatever happens around you, don't take it personal. Nothing others do is about you. Okay, so this is tricky when
That's the agreement. That's from the book.
That's straight from the book.
Yep.
This is tricky when it comes to betrayal. So if I go betray my spouse and she's upset because of that, is her being upset about me?
Well, she's upset because you've betrayed her trust.
Right. So is that about me?
Yes.
Should I take that personal?
No.
Okay. Okay. So you got to explain this, because I totally agree with you. Absolutely agree with you. So what does it mean to take something personal?
I think this is where the essence of this is getting caught up. And I want to thank this person, because I think a lot of people that we talk to feel this energy. And a lot of people who read the book, they try to adopt the don't take it personally by not feeling, by not showing, by not engaging, when in reality, that's not what that principle is about. The principle is actually about all the things that just that were just listed here that aren't happening. It's about acceptance of reality of the situation I find myself in. It's about taking accountability for my own actions and my own life and my own choices and the way that I see myself and the way that I engage in this world, rather than having the world dictate something to me and agreeing with it from a shame-based perspective that it's all my fault and that I'm terrible and I'm horrible.
Yeah, it's about self-worth. It's when something happens around me from somebody, they do something. Does that affect who I am as a son of God? Like, it's about my self-worth. And the fact of the matter is my worth is infinite. It's eternal. It's there no matter what. Whether someone's crying in front of me, mad at me, punching me in the face, whatever, it doesn't affect that. I am. Already, I just am, right? Mm-hmm. And so when things happen around me, it's not about me. Now, Tyler had a couple clients. They went and did this like coaching, and they took this don't take things personally to the extreme, and they got back and they would show up with their wives and they'd be like, their wives would be upset or sad or whatever. And they'd be like, that's fine. You can be upset. Like it's fine. That's perfect. Everything's perfect. Everything's good. Everything's okay. Well, if you're upset, that's about you.
Yep. Sucks to be you.
That's you. And so they're acting as if they're not taking anything personally at the cost of empathy. So, empathy is like evidence that you're really good at not taking things personally.
Yeah, we need to unpack that, Brandon, because that's really important here with this question. What makes empathy? Empathy is almost like an indicator that you're not taking it personally.
Yeah, this is a quote from a very wise person. This is from me. It says, if I don't care what you think about me, then I can love you deeper and allow you to actually love me. Right?
Let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So when they come back from this training and they're cold to their wives and they're like, yep, like I am so boundaried with you. I'm not going to connect to anything you say or do because I'm good. Like I'm good. I'm standing on my own 2 feet. That's wonderful. Good for those guys. Great. Good job. I actually think they're terrified of their spouse and they take her feelings personally. And so instead of getting all kind of enraged and in drama about it, they found this very manipulative stone wall that is prideful, that pushes them above them and says, look, I'm good. I don't have to connect to you.
Yes.
Because they're terrified, because they're actually taking personally their wife's pain. Correct?
Yeah. Yes. Right? It's almost like an overcorrection. And I see why, you know, to be fair to the side, you know, to the betrayer side, I see why if they've been living in this way where the natural currency has always been shame, and shame is something is desperately wrong with me to the fact that I won't be able to be, you know, loved or accepted by people. And now I go and I hear this new thing. It's like, it almost feels like music to my ears that I don't have to live in shame anymore. And the way that I don't live in shame is I don't accept all the criticism that people give me, right? Like,
yeah.
The problem is that it's an overcorrection in the wrong direction without the actual thing that needs to be there for shame resiliency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So instead it's the same, it's the same thing. It's just a different version of the shame screen.
It's a different action.
Yeah. So in order to be shame resilient, I have to make peace with myself over the things that I've done and realize that they don't define me while still taking accountability for the things that I've done.
Yes.
Right. And that's what's missing in this when they come back and like, oh, like, hey, I'm having a really rough day. Like let's say I have someone call up their husband today and say, hey, you know what? I know there's nothing really wrong right now, but I'm just having a really rough day reliving some of the stuff that happened. It's been terrible for me. And if he could go a couple different ways, if he's not shame resilient and he's saying he's not taking it personally, he's actually, this is a gaslight now by going like, whoop, sucks to be you. Like, I don't know. That was in the past. Like, get over it.
I'm good. I had a good day.
Yeah. I'm doing great today. Like instead of being able to go, Now the other side of that that's not healthy is, oh my gosh, I'm so bad. Like you're right. I suck so terribly. I won't be happy until you're happy. Like, you know, I'm horrible. No. What's the middle ground? The middle ground is, hey, babe, like I'm sad. The fact that we're this far into this process and this still comes up for you, I hate to see you in pain. Like, I'm sad you're having a rough day.
Well, and like, the middle ground is tell me more. Like,
yeah,
help me,
I'd love
help
to know
me understand.
About it.
No.
Yeah, I can hold it. I can hear it.
It looks like healthy attachment. It's secure attachment where there's honesty and boundaries and empathy at the same time. That's strength. That's where. So, if you come home and your spouse is pissed, just angry. Let's walk through a scenario so we can see it, like these principles at play.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's give the different scenarios. Now, people struggling with sex addiction, Tyler, you and I both know that they are notoriously codependent.
Yes.
Usually, like they overreact. They take personally, their partner's everything they do. And so they're oftentimes Mr. Nice Guys because they're trying to please and trying to make sure that their partner isn't upset. And so they're full of resentment because they're Mr. Nice Guys. I'm generalizing some here, but
yeah.
Or they're total like jerks where they're the other side, swing to the other side where they're like, I don't care.
Self-absorbed.
I don't care what you think. Yeah. Self-absorbed, disconnected, like gaslighting their partner to all get out of like they feel narcissistic. And we've talked about that. So they feel either narcissistic or extremely weak, Mr. Nice Guys, because what's there, Tyler? It's the same thing.
Yes.
What's underneath all of it?
The fear of rejection.
Yeah. They don't believe they're lovable. And so if I go, let's say I go to this special coaching training thing and I come home and my wife's mad, angry, and upset. And I'm like, hey, I read this Don Miguel Ruiz book, Don't Take Things Personally. So I take her emotion that she's emoting toward me and I turn it right back around and I shove it back in her face, so to speak. I say, well, that's yours. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. I'm turning more into that a disconnected jerk side of things, right?
Yes.
So if I know who I am and I don't take her emotions personally, they don't threaten me. Her emotions don't threaten me. I'm not scared of them. In fact, I want to know her and I want to know why she's hurting. And if I'm truly not taking it personally, I'll step into those emotions with her. And this is what we were talking about. Tell me more, or what you were just saying, right, Tyler? It's, whoa, like I would get curious. I wouldn't get defensive. I would get honest with my bound. Let's say she's trying to punch me or whatever. I'd have boundaries. Hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. That doesn't work for me. But I want to know why you're so upset. Because I am standing on my own 2 feet. Your emotions aren't scary to me. I wouldn't say that to her. But like, I'm standing on my own 2 feet. I'm not scared of your emotions. So like, oh, let's open up space for you. And Tyler, is that not the secret sauce to repairing a relationship after betrayal? Is that not the secret stuff that builds trust, that consistent empathy and caring about your partner's pain?
And it requires
not being able to take it personally.
Right. Well, I think it's, you just hit something on the head here that I think is really hard. And I want to come back with a question for you in just a second too, but you named two things that simultaneously need to be developed at the same time. If you're the kind of, you know, we're talking about a man here. If you're the kind of man who actually wants to be the person who can help rebuild trust, you need to grow into a place where you know who you are enough to live within your own values and boundaries at the same time that you're showing up with empathy.
Yep.
And if you're doing both of those things, you by nature of being able to do both of those things are demonstrating shame resiliency. And it seems that shame is the thing that knocks both of these those things off the tracks.
Right.
So you said something I want to come back to, because I could just hear like a lot of our listeners probably... some of our listeners just got mad at you for saying that they're afraid of their wife. Some of them are right now going, that's exactly right. But how do I not be afraid of my wife? Like, I am afraid of my wife. So if that's the pathway I am, like, how do I break that then? Like, how do I actually come to a place of being able to not take it personally so that I can hear and feel with her?
When I say that someone struggling with sex addiction is notoriously codependent, when you look at that, Tyler, they're trying to get their worth from their partner, from their spouse. And what that indicates is that there's a breakdown in their relationship with God. What that indicates is that they don't know who they really are. And so they're trying to draw it from something, or they're acting out in their addiction and trying to get some feel-good feeling of okayness in that addiction or with that affair partner or something. So all of this is evidence that they don't truly know how loved they are. They don't truly feel that unconditional love of God. And we could dig further down and say, well, maybe it's because of some trauma that they've had, some wounds that they've incurred, that it's kind of knocked them off of knowing how God loves them and how God sees them. And so the question you just asked is a huge question.
It's big.
Because what needs to be done, the work that needs to be done is that work, is to dig down and dig down and dig down and make peace with a lot of things that are getting in the way of you actually knowing who you truly are. But when you get those answers, when you have that initiation, when you understand who you are, your part, it shifts the way you look at your partner and your relationship. It's not a consummatory, transactional thing. It's way different than that. It's about understanding each other, knowing each other, supporting each other, being
it's
friends
a
with each other.
Symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And because like it is so healthy to get to a point where, and I hate to say this, Tyler, if Jenny were to divorce me today, I'd be in pain. That would be really hard.
Yeah.
I'd be okay.
Yes.
I would be fine. And there would be a reason for it and a
That's
purpose
not very
for it.
Romantic.
Right. But because that's true, and if I can grapple with that and not and get to that place of okayness with it, my chances of having a better relationship with her are much better.
That's right.
Right? Because I'm okay. Right?
That's right. I think that's part of what we've been fed lies to our whole lives is, you know, everybody wants to have this relationship that's based off of, I can't survive without you. My heart will stop beating if you leave me. And then nobody can actually have a decent relationship because they think that's what it's supposed to be like. When in reality, on the day to day, this has got news for everybody who loves Disney movies. Like, Disney's been lying to you for years because it feels good.
Oh, don't pop that bubble today.
But well,
wow.
Well,
you just broke, you just broke everyone's heart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love the movies too, and they're fun to watch. But in the real world, the people that you and I work with, that we know, that have the very best relationships, they would agree with what you just said, which is, we have two people who both know who they are and like what they see in the mirror, and those two people, of their own choice, come together and willingly offer themselves because two people like that together make more than they could individually of themselves. And they would be okay. Life would go on. They would still like themselves in the mirror, but they now build a relationship where they love one another because they actually give of themselves to one another rather than being there to take from one another so that they can survive.
Tyler, if you... Let's say you had a couple come in for counseling, and you had two different couples. This is going to be a stupid question, but I want to illustrate this. One couple comes in and they're like, "Fix our relationship." Like, they suck. Like, you should hear what they did. They did this. They did that. Or it's crazy. They're doing this. So tell them they're wrong. Change that for me. Okay, that's one couple. And then you had another couple. Go ahead.
Just to be clear, you're saying they're saying that about each other to you.
About each other, yeah.
Okay.
They're trying to get me to take sides.
Yeah.
They're trying to get me to validate how painful it is to be in that marriage with the other person, and they want me to set the other person straight, so that they can have happiness in their marriage. Okay. So there's that couple. Then another couple comes in. And that, like, some things have broken down in their relationship. They're not where they want to be. And they're like, "Brandon, tell me what I need to do to do my work.
How do I help this go right?
To make this better.
I want to fix this.
I want to take ownership. I'm going to take accountability. And I want to look at me. And I want to work on me. And I want to figure out where I'm breaking down here." And each partner came in that way. Okay. And then when we did the work with them, they followed through and actually went and did their own work, right? Okay, I told you this is a stupid question.
Yeah,
but like, I was talking to a buddy last week, and his marriage has been on the rocks for years, and he started. He'd been to therapy, couples therapy, all this stuff, and he started this new program, and he's like, "Brandon, like, I wish somebody would have told me that the only thing I have control over is me. And like, I just need to focus on my own work, like get as healthy as I possibly can be as a man." And I'm like, listening to it, like, yeah, yeah. Like,
yeah, we've been going to lunch for the last 20 years, like talking about this stuff.
Be a source of strength. Like, know yourself independent of her. Like, stop, trying to make it all about pleasing her and making it right. And like, know yourself because you're good who you are, right?
Yeah. So you can see, Brandon, though, I mean, what you just said, I think, is really poignant. And you could also see why this can be so easily confused, because it sounds, there's like conflicting sounds here, right? Don't take anything personally. And if you don't take anything personally, that'll actually help you become more accountable, which means you can take responsibility for your life. But doesn't that mean you're taking it personally?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So we, no. That, but you can see how that would be confusing, because the pathway to freedom is through accountability. But now, right, I'm making it about me to help things go right, and I'm having to be responsible for my part of the situation. How is that not taking it personally?
Well, let's talk about what it is, like taking it personally. It is reality. So like, if I come home to a spouse that's upset, the reality is there's a spouse that's upset.
Yes.
If I come home, if I'm working my recovery, and like, I got to look at it. So maybe I'm like half-assing it, and someone calls me out on that. And so then I get accountable and I step into gear. I'm not taking it personally. I'm listening to the feedback, because that's the reality. So, somebody who is taking it personally, and this is where it gets twisted, can't face the reality. They go into all kinds of denial and deception and manipulation and gaslighting and whatever word we want to use here. They can't handle the reality because it's overwhelming, because the shame is triggering them so much from the reality.
Yes.
Am I answering the question, Tyler?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. That's why people get confused. And what I hear you saying, and I'm just going to say it in a different way, is taking it personally in the sense that we talk about it is accepting the judgment, accepting the label, accepting the shame, taking it personally, making it about you in the sense that you're the victim, you're never good enough, living in the shame, versus when you don't take it personally, it puts you in reality so that you can take accountability rather than taking it personally for living in the reality that you are in and becoming the best person you can be inside of that reality.
Yeah. Yeah. So taking ownership is different than taking it personally.
That's
so, yeah. So when we talk about accountability, when I say, hey, I'm taking ownership of this and I'm stepping into this, I have this goal, I have this thing, I want to create something new in my life. That's not taking it personally. When we're talking about taking it personally, we're talking specifically about shame, and we're talking about your self-worth.
Yes. So if we were to take what you just said and apply it back to one of the examples that we have now, wife calls up, having a really rough day today, I'm just reliving some of this stuff. Instead of, sucks to be you, like, that's all your work, it's, that's a thing of the past, like, that's on you, I now, as the husband, get to go, how do I help things go right here? I want to, what kind of man do I want to be in this moment with my wife, right? I can't own it for her, because that won't actually solve the problem for us.
No.
Right.
That's more codependent behavior.
Right. That would be selfish on my part, actually, because I'd be trying to pacify all of her feelings, because I can't take,
because you can't handle her
response
pain
that she's having. I also don't want to just stonewall her, because that's not the kind of man I was born to be. I want to be a man who loves his partner, who supports her, who validates, who's connected, who shows empathy. Oh, now that I'm not taking it personally, I'm here as an instrument in this moment to offer my wife my strength, which means the strength means two things. It means I can lean in and be in the space of her painful emotions at the same time that I can be boundaried with allowing the things that I can take responsible for, I will, and the things that I can't, I won't, but I'll still be loving when I don't.
But right. what you're talking about, Tyler, is can be very hard. It's a test of your strength and knowing who you are. So, like, I'll give you an example. I got negative feedback on social media from a stranger once, and it was ridiculous. Like, it
you
wasn't
did?
Even
shocker.
Yeah.
That never happens on social media.
Yeah, it wasn't even close to like what they were kind of saying wasn't even close to who I was or what I was actually saying. It didn't bother me. What do you know? Like a stranger that I honestly don't really care about, like it didn't bother me. Now, when you have a wife or a spouse, a husband, you know, crying on the floor or yelling at you or upset, it's a different ball game.
Yes.
Why is it a different ball game? Yeah, it matters more.
She matters.
Yeah, it matters more. And so her feedback, it's easier to go into that codependent realm of like, whoa, I don't know where she stops and I begin. And because of that, I can't handle it. And so I'm either going to shut off and tell her, like, stop taking things personally, or I'm going to Mr. Yes Man it, Mr. Nice Guy it, or I'm going to crumble. And what we're talking about is none of those things. What we're talking about is knowing yourself so much that she's not like the stranger, but in a way it is. Like, I don't care. I don't care what you think so much that I care deeply about who you are.
I can care more about you in this moment than I care about my own self-preservation.
Well, I don't know, Tyler. I think you need that self-preservation and the caring at the same time. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, you're offering yourself.
Because somebody in strength will step into their self-preservation and say, I have my boundaries and I know that I can preserve myself. And because I know that,
yeah,
I therefore can know you. And one thing with betrayal, Tyler, that I think a lot of people don't understand is it's a process of grief. And grief comes in waves. And the emotions that come with grief. When we say grief, you know, grief is an emotion, but the process of grief is a ton of different emotions: anger, depression, sadness, all of those things. And a lot of times what a partner doesn't understand is that the partner who was betrayed needs to process those emotions. They need to move them through themselves.
They need space for that.
Yeah, so they need to journal it, they need to talk it, they need to cry, they need to listen to music, they need to process those emotions. And when you take your partner's pain personally, you are saying, I am not available to be there for you as you process these emotions. And when you say that, that's the second betrayal, or it's the second rejection in the relationship. I betrayed you, which is rejection, and now your pain and your process.
I can't handle you, even though I've caused it.
I can't handle you, so I'm going to reject that yet again. So here you are wanting to save your marriage or whatever. Like, and then in the very moment where you have massive opportunity to hold that pain and to help her process some of her most vulnerable, deepest pain she's ever had, and that you have opportunity to build trust in that moment, you turn around and say, I'm not taking your pain personally. Yeah. I don't care. I'm good. Right?
Missed opportunity.
Huge
big time.
Missed opportunity. And to understand that I'm not going to take personally that you have to process this pain. That sucks. And it sucks that something that I did pushed you into this pain. That sucks.
Yeah.
And I do feel horrible about that because of me, not because of you, because that was outside my integrity. And I feel horrible about that. And I want to be here for you as you process through this pain.
Yeah. Right? I think something that gets in the way of that, Brandon, too, I love what you said there is, if I'm the one, and I have been the one who goes and does this thing to damage the relationship, I feel like, and this is natural, what my wife is experiencing is actually unfair. She didn't bring it on herself at all. Like, I went and made choices. I lied. I hid. I did all that stuff. Now it's out in the open. I feel, because I've done those things, that I'm the one that needs to fix those things. And in many ways and in many cases, no matter what I do, I can't fix the thing that I broke.
Yep.
And so I scramble trying to fix it, thinking that that's going to be the trust building thing, when in reality, I can only do my part to try to make amends and help things heal. But I actually have to let go of the need to fix. I have to just be able to hold the space for my wife to say, this isn't fair. You dumped all this crap on me and now I'm left holding the bag. And I'm like, I wish I could fix it. I'm doing what I can, but I know that this is yours too. And I'm sad about that. I'm sorry.
Her pain is her pain. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, if you cheated or acted out or whatever, like you did that because your heart needs to shift. Yeah. Or else you're going to continue to act that way in a relationship. And so instead of focusing on what do I need to do to try to fix it for her because she's telling me this or that or whatever, you say, what work do I need to do inside of myself?
I need to make sure I never do this again.
Inside, just for me.
I got to figure out what's going on in me that led me to do this crap that hurt all the people that I love.
And give her space to process this pain.
And I need to be able to allow her the space to do that, knowing that as much as I want to, I won't be able to fix it all.
That's hard.
Oh man, that's hard.
Yeah, but what Tyler and I are trying to get to, and it's almost impossible at the beginning of the recovery process, is what interdependency looks like when you're going through the recovery process. And that it looks like really clear boundaries and a ton of connection and love at the same time.
It's the practice of both. It needs both. That's why so often you hear us talk about the three recoveries. There's his, hers, and ours. Ours will never happen unless his and hers are actively being engaged in, meaning I'm growing. We're both growing into the actual truth and acceptance of who we are as individuals. And that's so, so important, because that's what actually makes a great relationship. And to me, right. Like, I know this sounds really backwards and people who are in a lot of pain right now might not hear this the right way. I hope you do. The recovery process is one of the best opportunities any couple ever gets to actually learn what it means to have an interdependent relationship.
Yeah.
It's just a big, hard, personal process.
Yep. The trust rebuilding and all of that demands learning how to detach all of the unhealthy ways that you were attached to each other and reattach that relationship in a healthy way. Tyler, I know we're out of time. Can I just flip this on its head? I'm going to drop kind of a bomb here at the end, but
okay.
We
just
always
like
say
a good therapy session, you know, right at the very end, they finally like, oh, by the way, this thing happened. Oh, okay.
I just want to acknowledge this, because we say this a lot where we say like their acting out or their affair isn't about you. So this is kind of the other side of it, right?
Yeah, don't take that personal.
Don't take it personal if you were betrayed. And that feels really invalidating a lot of times to the partner, where they're like, oh, please, that's easy for you to say.
Yes, right.
And so you got to come back to this definition of what we mean by that. Of, you know, if Tyler, if you punched me in the face like hard, probably wouldn't hurt much. You've done it many times, and I'd be fine. But if you punched me in the face, is that about me or is that about you?
It's about me,
right? And yet the pain is on my face.
Yes.
So it's still painful. Like, ouch, that hurts. But I'm not going to take it personal that you punched me in the face.
You went and
like,
did something stupid.
Yeah, you did that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not about my self-worth. That's not about my heart and who I am.
It still just hurts like crazy.
But ouch, you just broke my nose. Like, this hurts.
Yeah.
But I know who I am. Like, I'm still okay who I am. Like, I'm still in form here, although you hurt me. So yes. Can you see what I'm saying?
You hurt me. You hurt me is different than you hurt me, therefore that means I'm
it
not
defines
good
enough. Me.
It's the definition of self that comes with the pain, that is the not taking it personal that we're trying to say. You know, if I go and I punch you in the face, that's going to hurt. Crazy in crazy ways. But if I punch you in the face and then you go home at night and lay down in bed and be like, Nobody loves me, and everyone, I'm just the world's punching bag.
I'm not good
Now,
enough. I'm not. Yeah.
I take what was a painful thing, and I have now added on immense suffering on top of the pain.
I've used it as proof of my unworthiness and my
That's
not
the not taking
okayness.
it personally part.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't mean that the pain isn't valid. The pain is 100% valid. You and I, Brandon, can only imagine what it's like to have that kind of pain, to know that somebody you love and trusted and cared about and relied on has betrayed you. Like that pain, it's 100% valid, but it's not about you.
Nothing, like Don Miguel Ruiz says, nothing others do is about you.
Yeah.
It's about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we gotta, if we can get over our egocentrism a little bit outside of the world that we live in and think the world revolves around us, we realize that everybody's kind of doing their thing.
Yeah.
And like, it's not about us. And what is about us is our relationship with God, first and foremost.
Yeah. And then our choices inside of the reality that we find ourselves.
To live in, to try to come back to that integrity and live in that truth and do the best we can there.
Yep.
So, Tyler, fun topic.
Yeah,
I love
good
this.
Discussion,
And
Brandon.
Thank you to whoever submitted that question. I hope our discussion helped bring some answers and some clarity to it. Or maybe there's just more confusion.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know.
And if there is, reach out to us and we're happy to keep talking about it. So you and I both love the four agreements. So anytime someone brings up the four agreements, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. So, all right, you guys, thank you and have a wonderful day. We'll see you.